Hi, you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with the Arizona Daily Sun for Thursday, April 17th, 2025. Our front page articles today are called Suspects in Sting Operation Arraigned. Home prices for March show upward trends. And putting the arts back on center stage. At the top of the page, we have our first front page article. It's called Suspects in Flagstaff Sting Operation Arraigned This Week. Superior court proceedings began this week for multiple suspects arrested in the Flagstaff Police Department's recent online sting operation. Flagstaff radio broadcaster Dave Zorn and three other suspects accused of making sexual advances to minors were arraigned at the Coconino County Courthouse on Monday, April 14th. All of the suspects appearing in person and in the custody of the Coconino County Detention Facility initially pleaded not guilty to the allegations set forth in grand jury indictments, a routine starting point in felony cases. They are currently scheduled to return to court for further proceedings in mid-May. Zorn, who is charged with multiple counts of luring a minor for sexual exploitation and attempted furnishing of harmful items to a minor, is being represented by Flagstaff criminal defense attorney Daniel Kaiser of the Kaiser Law Group. In one court filing, Kaiser wrote, "Mr. Zorn will dispute the charges." He also indicated that he would challenge the weight of the evidence in the case. Reached for comment, Kaiser stated, "The only thing I will say is that Zorn is presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and I will defend him and his constitutional rights vigorously." Unusually, Navajo County Deputy Attorney Rob Edwards is acting as the lead prosecuting attorney for Zorn's case. Coconino County Attorney Amon Barker said his office referred the case to another county's office to avoid any potential conflict of interest and to ensure the integrity of the legal process. "When our office has any connection that could reasonably call our objectivity into question, we refer the matter to an outside agency to maintain fairness, transparency, and public trust," Barker added. Kaiser has requested a reduction in Zorn's bond, currently set at $100,000. Prosecutors oppose that motion, arguing that Zorn's alleged actions demonstrated a threat to the community at large and suggesting that he could be a flight risk if released. In that filing, prosecutors asserted that the evidence in the case, primarily phone-based communications with an undercover DPS, Arizona Department of Public Safety detective, posing as a 15-year-old Flagstaff resident, is voluminous and included photographs Zorn took of himself and sent. They also stated that Zorn was arrested near the Flagstaff Mall after arranging to meet with an individual he believed to be a minor. The Arizona Daily Sun has requested, but not yet received, a copy of the DPS detective's investigation and arrest report. Zorn and one other suspect arrested during the same sting operation, Brent W. Smith, were arraigned in Division 2 of Coconino County Superior Court before Judge Joshua Steinledge. Smith, charged with a single count of child sex trafficking, is being represented by Ryan Stevens of the Flagstaff firm Griffin and Stevens. Under Arizona law, state law, child sex trafficking can refer to any attempt to engage in commercial sexual conduct with a minor. It is important to be clear that the website utilized by law enforcement in this matter is expressly designed for adults only, Stevens told the Arizona Daily Sun. We're carefully reviewing all legal defenses for Mr. Smith involving the fake account operated by the police and the untruthful statements the officers sent to Mr. Smith. Two other suspects, Marcus Wimberly and Thomas J. Smith, were arraigned in Division 3 later that afternoon before Judge Stacy Krueger. Both are being represented by the Coconino County Public Defender's Office and have been charged with a single count of child sex trafficking. And that article was titled, Suspects in Flagstaff Sting Operation Arraigned This Week. And that was written by Sam McLaughlin, Sun Staff Reporter. Next on the front page, we have an article that is called Flagstaff Home Prices for March 2025 Higher Than Previous Month, Year. And this is written by the Daily Sun staff. The median sales price of residential homes in Flagstaff was $693,000 in March, representing an increase from the previous month and year, according to the March 2025 market review from the Arizona Association of Realtors, which reported that March's median sales price was 14.5% higher than February's and 12% higher than in March 2024 at $618,500. The median sales price for 2025 so far is $675,000, compared to $625,000 at the same point in 2024. Flagstaff's median price was $605,500. Both months are still lower than the median reported for Flagstaff in January 2025, which was $704,018. The month saw 91 closed sales, higher than in February and similar to March 2024, and 180 new listings, with homes selling for 98.4% of the list price. The median number of days homes were on the market is 65, continuing a downward trend since December 24, 2024, which reported a median of 115 days on the market. According to the monthly Arizona Housing Report from the Arizona Association of Realtors, 6 months' supply is considered a balanced market, with lower amounts of supply being a seller's market. And according to the Northern Arizona Association of Realtors, NAAR, the city currently has 4.2 months' worth of supply of inventory, which is slightly lower than the 4.4 months of inventory in February and above the 3.1 months in January. Statewide, the Arizona Association of Realtors, AAR, also reports a seller's market being closer to balanced with 5.65 months of supply inventory. This is 25.9% higher than the year before. Flagstaff's supply of inventory is 93.3% higher than in March 2024. Arizona's median sales price, according to that report, was $445,000 in March, compared to $435,000 in March 2024. the state had 8,648 sales. AAA's report on fuel prices, accessed April 14th, lists the average regular gas price in the Flagstaff metro area as $3.227 compared to $3.38 across Arizona and $3.184 nationally. The metro area with the highest price in Arizona for the day was Scottsdale, with a current average price of $3.70 for regular gas. A year before, Flagstaff's average gas price was $3.77. Let's just say it that way. The current price is 1 cent lower than the Flagstaff average for the previous day, about 2 cents lower than the previous week, and 3 cents higher than the previous month. AAA lists the average gas price for the year before as $4.135. The NAAR market review can be found at nazrealtor.com/tools, with the monthly report from Arizona Associations of Realtors at aaronline.com/2021/03/24/Arizona-housing-report. And information on fuel prices is available at gasprices.aaa.com. And that heavily number-laden story is called Flagstaff Home Prices for March 2025 Higher Than Previous Month and Year. And that was written by the Daily Sun staff. And our third and the final of the front page stories today is called Students at Coconino High School Performing the Little Mermaid Junior. And this is written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. Let's see. Students at Coconino High School are putting on a musical this week for the first time in 15 years. Wow. The school's theater club, in addition to homeschoolers and Flagstaff High School students, will be performing The Little Mermaid Junior at 7 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, with a matinee performance featuring the show's understudies at 2 p.m. on Saturday. Each show will be at CHS's Zanzuki Theater. Tickets are $5 for students and $8 for adults and can be purchased ahead of time by scanning the QR code on the poster. Don't know where the poster is. We have a talented cast. Wonderful things are happening, and I hope everybody can come and experience it and witness this comeback, said 10th grader Ava Rios, one of the play's directors and CHS Theater Club president. It's a student-led production, with students involved in almost every aspect of the performance, from the show selection to casting and set design. The theater club officers, Rios said, offered behind-the-scenes tasks to club members based on what they noticed about their strengths. Billy Miller, a CHS teacher and the theater club's producer, said there hasn't been a shortage of volunteers. Even as late as last week, there were kids saying, "Oh, you're doing a show? How can I be involved?" he said. So it's really students seeing their peers doing this and wanting to join us for a good time. The CHS Theater Club has been managing the production along with some students from FHS and local homeschoolers. A variety of classes at CHS have been helping out behind the scenes. Art students designed the poster and decorated the sets, which were built by the woodshop class, while a statistics class developed the budget and music students will be providing accompaniment during the shows. The Atricos Theater Company, Stargazer Collaborative Theater, and other Flagstaff Theater companies have also contributed to the production. All of the theater club's work on the musical has been done outside of school hours, as CHS does not currently have a theater class, although it will be adding one next year. Those involved in the musical have been practicing for 2 hours after school every day throughout the semester so far, and have more than doubled that time this week for the final dress rehearsals. This is the 8th play Rios has worked on since starting theater in 7th grade. The Little Mermaid Junior is her first time directing. She said she's been taking inspiration from Theatricos' education director, Joe Maniglia, using strategies she's seen him use in performances she's acted in. "I'm like, okay, I'll just do what he does," she said. "I'm trying to make everybody seen and heard and make sure they have what they need. Trying to really be a leader and someone who implements kindness. Trying to show that in the work is something I've struggled with, but I think it's part of the job. And it's wonderful and it's really coming together." She added, "I take a lot of pride in being the youngest director in Flagstaff, and I'm just very, very excited to be doing this." We couldn't be more proud of how she's shaped the show, Miller chimed in, and is bringing it over the finish line. Returning performances to CHS. This will be the school's first full-length theater production since 2021, as well as its first musical in 15 years. Rios said her goal, as well as that of the theater club, is to continue to grow theater in the schools. She is also a member of the Arizona Youth Arts Council, part of which involves advocating for performing arts and their benefits. "I think there's been a loss of ambition and love for the arts, and one of my biggest goals has been providing that for other students and people," she said. "Theater is such a wonderful and magical place. It might be the most incredible space I've ever set foot into. So bringing an opportunity to have that is one of my biggest goals." Theater, taught by Miller, will be offered as a class for the first time next year. Miller said former principal Stacy Zanzuki was also involved in advocacy for performing arts at CHS, particularly for the remodeling of its theater space, which was completed last year. "I think that remodel injected some new energy," he said, "and really, it's been the students. I read somewhere that high school theater is probably the best collaborative project you can do, and everybody's really answered that call, contributing from all different kinds of areas." Miller added that the student-led approach will continue, using the process of putting together this week's show as a model. Both Rios and Miller hope CHS's theater program continues to grow. The plan is to put on 2 or 3 performances next year, alongside the new class and continued efforts from the club. "I hope this show and many others will reach students at Coconino and beyond, and have them see that the arts and theater is something that's special that they can be a part of," Rios said. "I hope that more people join. I hope that we're seen by administrators and seeing that, oh, this is something that is wonderful and should continue happening. I hope that we get continuous support for this." And looks like this ends with a picture of the poster, which, let's see, you can probably contact Coconino High School if you're interested in attending these performances. And that article was called students at Coconino High School performing The Little Mermaid Junior. And I believe that starts tonight. And that was written by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. Moving on to page A3 now that we finished the front page, we have, this is the local and Arizona page, and we have an article from Community Health Matters. It's called Why Mental Health Wellness Matters, and this is written by Northern Arizona Healthcare. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, an annual observance established by Mental Health America in 1949 to emphasize the importance of mental well-being. Next month is the time to raise awareness and reduce the stigma surrounding behavioral health issues, as well as highlighting how mental illness and addiction can affect all of us. This observance brings additional attention to the challenges faced by those with mental health conditions and the need for a supportive, understanding environment. Despite years of advocacy, awareness, and discussion, the stigma around mental health still exists. People can suffer in silence, brush off emotional struggles, or feel ashamed to seek help. That's why Mental Awareness Month matters. It's about recognizing the daily impact of mental health on our lives and committing to do something about it. Mental wellness is crucial for overall health and well-being. It influences all aspects of our life, from our physical health and relationships to our ability to cope with challenges and make decisions. When mental health breaks down, everything else can follow, such as relationships, work, physical health, and basic daily functioning. By building a solid mental foundation, including emotional resilience, healthy coping tools, strong relationships, and self-awareness, to arm ourselves with the tools needed to withstand challenges. Promoting wellness is not just a one-person job. It's something that we all must do as a community. There are times when mental health issues get dismissed. Physical injury gets sympathy and support, but anxiety, depression, or trauma may get minimized. The gap between how we treat mental health versus physical health needs to close. That is why it's on all of us to work together to lead with actions such as normalizing therapy and counseling in our workplaces and friendships, encouraging rest and boundaries with ourselves and others, training leaders to recognize warning signs so they can support their teams, investing in mental health education in schools and workplaces, and talking openly about struggles without judgment or shame. Northern Arizona Healthcare's role. Hospitals and health systems play an important role in the conversations we have around mental health care. Northern Arizona Healthcare, NAH, knows that mental health is an important issue in our region and is committed to its expansion of outpatient behavioral health offerings. Expanding outpatient care will help address and identify mental health conditions earlier, which will allow patients to have immediate care that can be maintained in their home and community. Flagstaff Medical Center, FMC, currently offers both inpatient and outpatient behavioral health care to patients from across Northern Arizona. NAH also provides integrated care, with licensed psychologists practicing in its Coconino County and Yavapai County primary care clinics on the connections between patients' physical and mental health conditions. FMC's inpatient program has 17 adult beds and 9 for adolescent patients. As part of its long-standing commitment to supporting all organizations that work in the realm of behavioral health care, NAH will ensure that the community has access to the full continuum of care for all who need it. If you or a loved one is experiencing any of the following symptoms, it's time to seek confidential help. And these are a list of the symptoms: a growing inability to cope with daily living, depression, noticeable personality or behavioral changes, multiple unexplained physical ailments or changes in eating and sleeping patterns, confused thinking, inability to concentrate and/or memory loss, excessive fear, anxiety, or suspiciousness, withdrawal from family, friends, and associates, and hallucinations. The National Mental Health Hotline is 988. Mental health isn't something you fix once and forget about. It's ongoing work, just like physical health, and it needs daily attention and care. Whether you or a loved one have personally faced mental health challenges, we are all affected. Being open, compassionate, and educated can make someone feel seen or even save a life. Mental Health Awareness Month is a reminder that we still have work to do, but we are working toward a healthier, more compassionate world. To learn more about FMC's behavioral health and psychiatry services, please visit nahealth.com/behavioral-health-and-psychiatry. And that local Arizona article is called Community Health Matters, Why Mental Health Wellness Matters. And that was written by Northern Arizona Healthcare.
Hello, I'm reader Bethany Williams, and I'm going to read for you some of today's news briefs by Daily Sun staff. The first of which is Coconino County selling surplus property via online auction. Need a four-wheel drive SUV, an air compressor, or a 2002 Chevy Malibu at a bargain price? Coconino County Public Works has begun its spring auction of surplus property. The auction is online only and open through Friday, April 25th on govdeals.com, govdeals. The auction includes items such as used vehicles and heavy equipment that have been replaced or retired by the department's Fleet Services Division. Pictures and descriptions for all items are available on the auction website. In-person viewing of auction items at the Public Works facility is not permitted for safety. A full list of items can be found by searching for Coconino County at govdeals.com. Buyers are responsible for all aspects of pickup or removal, which will be by appointment only following the auction closure. Items are sold as is. Next short, culvert beneath Cedar Avenue to be replaced next week. Construction on a new culvert beneath East Cedar Avenue will begin Monday, necessitating temporary lane closures between Grandview Drive and Monta Vista Drive. Eagle Mountain Construction, the city's contractor for the Spruce Wash suite of projects, will be replacing an existing box culvert with a higher capacity arch culvert to handle potential post-wildfire water flows. Crews will install half of the culvert at a time to avoid a complete road closure. Lane shifts will be in place, and motorists are asked to follow signs or posted detours carefully. Pedestrian and bicycle access will also be maintained through construction. The city did not provide an estimated completion date for the culvert replacement. The Spruce Wash suite of flood mitigation projects, also called the Museum Fire Flood Projects, are intended to reduce the risk and mitigate the impact of flooding in Flagstaff neighborhoods below the Spruce Wash watershed. The hydrology and runoff of that watershed were affected by the 2019 museum fire, leading to flash flooding during the summer monsoon rains of 2021. Flagstaff's Proposition 441, approved in the November 2022 election, provided $26 million for stormwater infrastructure improvements in the Spruce Wash area. Other ongoing projects include a new stormwater detention basin in The Wedge between East Cedar Avenue and Linda Vista Drive, an updated slip lane on the north side of The Wedge, and replacement of culverts on Linda Vista. Additional information is available at museumfloodprojects.com. More questions can be directed to the project hotline at 928-255-5153, 255-5153, or email info@museumfloodprojects.com. In a different traffic project, ADOT to begin work on wildlife overpass on I-17. The Arizona Department of Transportation, ADOT, will begin construction of an overpass crossing for wildlife on Interstate 17 south of Flagstaff, with the project scheduled for completion by fall of 2026. ADOT and the Arizona Game and Fish Department are partnering on the $15.8 million wildlife overpass project located 12 miles south of Flagstaff, which will also include the installation of an 8-foot-tall wildlife fence along more than 8 miles of the interstate. The stretch currently has no bridges and only one road culvert suitable for use by elk and deer. The project, funded primarily through the Federal Highway Administration, through the Federal Highway Administration's Wildlife Crossings Pilot Program, is an effort to improve wildlife habitat connections while reducing the risk of crashes involving animals, especially elk and deer. The earth and native vegetation covered wildlife overpass north of Willard Springs Road at milepost 327.4 will be 100 feet wide and designed to allow a variety of animals ranging from bears to elk to cross over the highway. Crews will temporarily pave the I-17 median crossovers in the area to allow traffic to be shifted to one side of the highway as needed, to limit closures while the overpass is being built. Safety barrier walls will be placed between the two directions of travel. The area that involves the new overpass and fencing construction accounted for 98% of crashes involving wildlife from Stoneman Lake Road to Flagstaff between 2018 and 22. Within the longer 32-mile stretch, about 75% of all crashes with wildlife involve elk, which can weigh up to 1,100 pounds. Another short, sheriff's deputies confiscate suspected fentanyl in I-40 stop. The Coconino County Sheriff's Office, CCSO, announced the seizure of 24 pounds of suspected fentanyl following a stop on Interstate 40 over the weekend. According to a press release, CCSO's canine unit stopped a vehicle for a traffic violation on I-40 eastbound near the Winona exit around 9:30 p.m. on Saturday. A subsequent search of the vehicle found 24.4 pounds of bagged blue pills alleged to be fentanyl. CCSO identified the driver as Jesus Alvaro Hernandez Salas, 36. Salas was booked into the Coconino County Detention Facility on a charge of transporting narcotic drugs for sale, a Class 2 felony in Arizona with a minimum sentence of 3 years in prison if convicted. CCSO said the matter is still under investigation and that no further information will be released at this time.
Next news brief, also written by Daily Sun staff, is called 4 advance in selection process for Superior Court vacancy. The field of candidates for an imminent vacancy in Coconino County Superior Court has narrowed from 8 to 4 following a meeting of the county's Commission on Trial Court Appointments, Monday, April 7th. The commission is seeking public input on the candidates ahead of the interviews scheduled for May 1st. The 4 applicants still under consideration are Charles W. Dowdy, Brian F. Shea, Paul V. Stearns, and Marianne E. Sullivan. An opening on the bench will be created by the retirement of current Judge Elaine Friedland Horn at the end of this month. Dowdy is the senior Arizona attorney for DNA People's Legal Services, a nonprofit legal aid organization. Shea is the chief criminal deputy attorney for the Coconino County Attorney's Office. Stearns is an assistant U.S. attorney for the Criminal Division of the United States Attorney's Office, District of Arizona. Sullivan is the senior assistant city attorney for the City of Flagstaff. The Commission on Trial Court Appointments will convene again to interview the remaining applicants on Thursday, May 1st, in the Jury Assembly Room of the County Courthouse, 200 North San Francisco Street. Members of the public may address the commission at that meeting or submit written comments to jnc@azcourts.com. I guess it's cut off here. There it is. No, .gov. Sorry. .gov. Email is preferred, but comments may also be mailed to 1501 West Washington, Suite 221, Phoenix, Arizona, 85007. Written comments must be received by April 28th. The applications of the candidates can be found at azcourts.gov/jnc/vacancy-applications. And that article, or that news brief, was called 4 Advance in Selection Process for Superior Court Vacancy. Our next news brief, let's see what we've got here. Our next news brief is called New North Country Healthcare Residents Match with Programs. And this is also Daily Sun staff. North Country Healthcare's Colorado Plateau Center for Health Professions recently matched with 8 residents who are set to begin stays in June. This year's class of residents includes 4 resident physicians, 2 pharmacy residents, and 2 dental residents, who will be completing their residencies at North Country Healthcare. The programs are specifically designed to promote healthcare in rural communities. We can't wait for our new residents to start in June 2025 and to teach them all about caring for the communities of Northern Arizona, said Maria Martinik, Center for Health Professions Director. We hope that many of them will choose to stay in Northern Arizona when they complete their training. Doctors Inna Amaryllis from Indiana University School of Medicine, Paige Deremer-Young from the A.T. Still University of Health Sciences, Kirksville School of Osteopathic Medicine, Emily Hong from the Arizona College of Osteopathic Medicine of Midwestern University, and to Mary Jordan from East Virginia Medical School at Old Dominion University, have been matched to the NARBA Institute Family and Community Medicine Residency Program. Doctors Karis Choi from Creighton University and Jordan Hahn from the University of Colorado have been matched have been matched to North Country's PGY1, I think it's one, community-based pharmacy residency program. Herman Espino, DMD, from the UNIBE School of Dentistry in the Dominican Republic, and Hazem Al-Namus, DDS, from Ajman University in the United Arab Emirates, have been matched to the NYU Langone AEGD Dental Residency Program. That was a mouthful. The family medicine program first started in 2020 and takes 3 years to complete, while the pharmacy and dental residency programs both last 12 months. A federally qualified health center and a patient-centered medical home, North Country residents complete their training while also providing services to community members. More information about residency programs from the Colorado Plateau Center for Health Professions can be found at coloradoplateauhp.org/residency. And the last of the news briefs on this page is titled, NAU's Sigma Chi Chapter Raises Over $116,000 for Cancer Institute, by Daily Sun Staff. The Zeta Omicron chapter of the Sigma Chi fraternity at Northern Arizona University announced it raised $16,572 for the Huntsman Cancer Institute, HCI, during its annual philanthropy week. The total ranked as the fourth most among all Sigma Chi chapters in the United States, as the fraternity sought to support cancer research and patient care. Located in Salt Lake City, HCI was established in 1995 as a cancer research center dedicated to understanding cancer at its most fundamental level, while translating that knowledge into more effective treatments and providing comprehensive education and care for patients. Throughout Philanthropy Week, Sigma Chi organized a series of fundraising events, engaging family and friends from all over in its mission to make a difference in the fight against cancer. The Call-A-Thon event on March 26th brought together individuals to reach out to friends, family, alums, and supporters to secure donations for the HCI. Every dollar of the $116,572 raised contributes to research and patient care, and the chapter extends gratitude to everyone who contributed, attended events, and helped spread the word. In its announcement, the Sigma Chi fraternity said it remains dedicated to its partnership with HCI and looks forward to continuing its efforts in supporting cancer research and awareness. To support HCI through the Zeta Omicron chapter, visit hope.huntsmancancer.org/gentoend, G-E-N-T-O-E-N-D, /Northern-Arizona-University. And that news brief was called NAU's Sigma Chi Chapter Raises Over $116,000 for Cancer Research. And that's written by the Daily Sun staff.
This article from page 7 of the newspaper is Home Away From Home by Abigail Kessler, Sun staff reporter. Native American students at Flagstaff High School have been involved in the planning of a traditional Navajo hogan on the school's campus for over the past several years. FHS had a dedication ceremony and blessing for the traditional Navajo dwelling structure in September of 2024. Its Native American Club has used it for a few meetings and cultural events in the months since. Utilization of the space for class lessons and additional events are in the works. Construction on the Hogan was completed last semester, almost 6 years after then-student Justina Slim, FHS class of 2019, started an effort to build it as part of an advanced placement capstone project. FHS Native American Academic Advisor Daryl Marks said students were involved in every step of the process, including the city permitting process, discussions with tribal chapters, district board meetings, giving input on traditional elements needed to be included, and selecting the wood. Mark said former FHS student Althea Etzidi, class of 2024, was particularly involved, organizing large groups of FHS and Coconino High School students to attend city planning meetings. Students were the ones that felt like this was something that was needed and missing in their education, and it brings them closer to what it is they want to learn about, he said. I think when students are participating in their education and learning about things they want to learn about, it makes them better citizens, relatives, and empowers them. He added, I can't tell you how much of a change I've seen in the students that have participated in the organizing around the Hogan, how much involvement they've wanted to have, not just in school, but within civics and politics and community organizing. According to Marx, about a quarter of FHS's 1,600 students are Native American. Up to 160 Indigenous students living in the Flagstaff Border Town Dormitory, also called Kinlani Dormitory, also attend FHS, while many live multiple hours away from their home during the school year. The Hogan is intended to be a familiar place for such students, who can use it for ceremonies, as a gathering space, or for other educational purposes. It has already been used for meetings of the Native American Club, a Navajo shoe game, and a few ceremonies. I think it's good to have this Hogan here because it's closer to home, and if you want to hold a ceremony here, you can, said FHS senior Autumn Bayi, who is a member of the Native American Club. You feel better after you go into a Hogan because you feel closer to home, closer to your family, closer to the ones that came before you. In the future, Mark said there are plans to use the Hogan for other events and activities and incorporate it into various classes at the school, such as history or Navajo language. The school's Indigenous ambassador, Junior Aislinn Arnold, has been organizing different workshops, including an upcoming event on parflesh earrings. And similar events could be held in the Hogan in the future. There are a lot of things culturally that can be done in the space, especially throughout the winter. But it's the accessibility that's limited what we could do, Mark said. The space is kept locked and needs both a reservation and the presence of an administrator to use. The process is involved to use the space is becoming more familiar, Mark said, so he hopes it will be used more going forward. Other schools can also make reservations and take trips to use the space. Use in language classes has also been delayed because the Hogan became ready for use after the start of the school year. In the future, it will be used as a location for the initial stages of language learning, Mark said. He also said, it's important to have someone, whether a student or a teacher, present who has an understanding of the cultural significance of the Hogan and can explain respectful ways to behave in the space. He gave City Hall as an example of another space with expected conduct for visitors. We have certain expectations of how to conduct ourselves and be when we're in that space, he said. It's part of the culture, ways of knowing. So being able to introduce that to non-Navajo or non-Native students might take a little extra conditioning. He and Bayi both discussed the United States history of boarding schools taking Native children from their homes and the lasting impact those practices had on how Native families approach education. This led to seeing school as something that children leave for, rather than a process in which families take part. As Indigenous and Native people, we're able to create what our ancestors wanted us to do because they went through so much for us to have our freedom again, to be able to practice our cultures, practice our songs, our traditions, our ceremonies, Bai said. It makes me feel happy and proud to be able to be a part of this, especially within the community, and letting people know that we are still here. We are still people. One potential impact of the Hogan, they said, is showing Indigenous students and their families they can take an active role in their learning. Having a space like this gives students a sense of ownership and responsibility to this home and maintain that home, Mark said, both as a connection to their culture and through teaching their peers and students about, sorry, their peers and teachers about the space. They need to be present in school and to help participate in their education, he said, as opposed to just being taught about their people, taught about their history. They're participating in their history, participating in the education that's being presented. And now they have a way to be able to shift some of that way of education. Arnold said she grew up in California and didn't have as strong a connection to her Native heritage. She's participated in a few ceremonies in the school Hogan with members of a family she's close to. Marx added that the Hogan is a matriarchal structure, representing a return to mother and female leadership. It also has a dedicated purpose for each of the cardinal directions. The doorway faces east toward the sunrise. The adolescents use the space in the south. Parents use the space to the west, which is also where teaching comes from, and elders use the space to the north. People really should take the time to understand the significance of the Hogan, she said. It's like a home for people. It represents all these things, and it's something sacred to us as Indigenous people, and it's used for prayers, for our songs, for our ceremonies, she added. Basically, in every aspect there is in Navajo, that's what the Hogan is for. It's a place of welcoming. It's something sacred for us. It holds so much power, and everything that's in the Hogan, it represents something. Regionally, geographically, different tribes have their own places of worship and their own different ways, but Navajo, we have our Hogan. And there's a photo of the Hogan. It's looks hexagonal in shape, and its sides are made of wood with a earthen dome on top with a little chimney from the apex. Just estimating from the scale in the photograph, I'd say it was somewhere between 12 and 20 feet in diameter. And that was Home Away From Home. FHS begins using Hogan for education, ceremonies, and events. In other local news, trucks with uranium cross Navajo Nation, reviving long-standing fears, by Emma McKissick of Cronkite News. Although the Navajo Nation has reached an agreement with Energy Fuels, Inc. on uranium transportation through tribal land, many tribal members remain concerned it won't protect them from the harms of uranium contamination. Tribal leaders say they had little choice but to enter the agreement, as federal law preempts any tribal regulations that conflict with it regarding the transportation of radioactive materials. In between the four sacred mountains of the Navajo Nation, two large white trucks made a passage through the land coming from the Pinyon Plain Mine in Arizona's Kaibab National Forest, which sits just outside the western boundary of the Navajo Nation, to the White Mesa Mill in southern Utah. The vehicles traveled more than 260 miles along Highways 89, 160, and 191, carrying a chemical all too familiar to the Navajo people, the one that haunted them for years, uranium. On July 30, 2024, Energy Fuels, Inc., a publicly traded company specializing in uranium mining and milling, among other things, sent the trucks with, quote, a very, very short notification time, end quote, before the transport, said Stephen Etzedy, executive director of the Navajo Nation Environmental Protection Agency, during a Navajo Nation Council meeting 6 months later. This led to months of negotiations and the eventual development of a transportation agreement between Energy Fuels and the Navajo Nation to set safety requirements and ensure accountability. Title 49 in the Code of Federal Regulations outlines transportation requirements and classifies uranium ore as a low specific activity material, which is the lowest level of radioactive material hauled on roads and highways, said Chris Beecher, acting Deputy Attorney General for the Navajo Department of Justice, at the meeting. This means that moving uranium from one place to another is exempt from rigorous transportation requirements. Indigenous communities in the Southwest have taken steps to prohibit uranium mining and transportation on their lands due to the history of contamination, illness, and death. In 2005, the Navajo Nation enacted the Diné Natural Resources Protection Act, which bans uranium mining and processing within its territory. In 2012, the nation passed the Radioactive and Related Substances, Equipment, Vehicles, Persons, and Materials Transportation Act, which prohibits the transportation of uranium on tribal lands. However, federal law, specifically the Atomic Energy Act and the Hazardous Materials Transportation Act, regulates hauling of radioactive materials and overrides state and tribal regulations that go against them, also known as federal preemption. The Navajo Nation has done the next best thing by entering into an agreement with Energy Fuels, Beecher said. According to the agreement, at no cost to the Navajo Nation, the corporation has agreed to clean up 10,000 tons of uranium-bearing materials from abandoned mines scattered throughout Navajo land. The company will also pay 50 cents per pound of processed uranium produced at the White Mesa Mill, which will amount to approximately $40,000 to $50,000 a month, depending on the richness of the uranium ore, with that rate to be adjusted annually for inflation, Beecher said during the meeting. And that's not all of that article, but that's all the time that I have for Trucks with Uranium Cross Navajo Nation.
That's all the time we have for the Arizona Daily Sun today. For Sun Sounds of Arizona, I'm volunteer reader Lisa Cantor-Ganey.